podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. Kind of a red letter day here. We're ending May. This is for Sunday, May 31st, 2020, with our 1,700th episode. Tech Guy, episode 1,700 next. Enjoy. Tech Guy podcast comes to you from TWiT's LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes enterprise-level security simple for your remote workforce. Check it out at lastpass.com/twit to learn more. This episode of the Tech Guy is brought to you by Epson's EcoTank printers. These days, when many of us are working from home or helping our kids with homework, we need the right printer. The Epson EcoTank makes it easy. Add the Epson EcoTank printer to your shopping list online at Sam's Club, Target, Walmart, and, of course, Epson.com/EcoTankLeo. And by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage. Thinking about moving your data storage to the cloud? Wasabi is enterprise-class cloud storage at one-fifth the price of Amazon S3 and faster than the competition, with no fees for egress or API requests and no complex storage tiers. Start a free trial at wasabi.com and enter the code TWIT. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Yes, it's time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches. Yes, it's the toy store. I admit it. The toy store, the fun stuff, the technology in the world around us. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number if you want to talk high tech with me. I'd love to talk to you. 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. This is kind of our respite from the unfortunate world around us. The difficult, challenging world around us, getting more difficult all the time, it seems. But here we're all equal. We're all going to be good to each other. We're all going to be kind to each other. And just, you know, for a couple hours anyway. We can get back to the real world later. A couple of hours. Escape into the world of technology. Where it doesn't, it simultaneously makes no difference at all. And yeah, it matters a little bit because it is, after all, kind of the way the world is changing quite dramatically, in fact. In weird ways, too. You know, this week, this personally affected me. Microsoft announced they're going to lay off all their journalists. They had, I don't know, maybe because nobody knew this or used it. Do you use, if you use Windows, do you use Microsoft's news app? There's a very nice news app in Windows. And then MSN has its own news section. They had dozens of journalists, editorial workers, creating the content, more like curating the content. Because I like Apple, they you know, mostly the MSN, and in fact, I guess all of MSN and Microsoft News is content from other sources. I think, you know, I don't know. That's actually an interesting question. It's in Edge. If you use the Edge. They're a part of Microsoft's SANE division. Oh, that's a terrible acronym. S-A-N-E. They're SANE. Search, Ads, News, Edge. Like all companies, Microsoft said on Friday, we evaluate our business on a regular basis. This can result in increased investment in some places and from time to time, redeployment. Redeployment. That's a funny word. In others. I've been redeployed. Now I'm on unemployment. These decisions are not the result of the current pandemic. They're laying off all the editors, all the journalists. It's true that, you know, media businesses have been hit by, you know, advertising revenue going down. But 50 journalists out of work. But here's the thing that I think is telling and interesting. I mean, that's just 50 journalists. They'll find another job. Okay, who cares? There's more important things to worry about. What I think is interesting is Microsoft's going to use computer algorithms. Oh, they're going to call it AI. I know they are. Artificial intelligence to do Microsoft News. They're not abandoning Microsoft News. They just decided machines can do it better. Which is funny because Apple's gone the other direction. Apple was using computers to curate news, and they just realized it didn't work so well. In fact, same with Google. Come to think of it, Google News was, you know, Google, that's Google. In theory, Google News is going to all be done by the computer. You know, we'll pick the stories based on, you know, stuff you're interested in, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then they decided, no, you know, this isn't a very good system. We're going with humans. You know, the worst place, frankly, the worst example of computer-curated news, and I don't like using the word AI for this. It's artificial intelligence, I guess. Mostly it's just, you know, computer program. That's what it is. Choosing the stories, the worst place for that, I mean, we'll see what happens with Microsoft News. I don't think it's improvement. But the worst place for that is Facebook. Facebook's and YouTube in a way too. These are the algorithms you hear all the time. An algorithm is an Arabic word. Originally comes from mathematics. It's now widely used for computer programs. It's a process or a set of rules to be followed in calculations or other problem-solving operations, especially by a computer. Comes from the Arabic, denoting the Arabic or decimal notation of numbers. The Arabic source is Al-Khwarizm. And actually comes from an actual mathematician, 9th century mathematician, Abu Ja'far Muhammad ibn Musa. They called him Al-Khwarizm. He was an algebraic and arithmetic genius. Anyway, that's a sidebar. Footnote. Okay, come back from the footnote, Leo. Focus. So the algorithms on Facebook and YouTube are kind of notorious for doing kind of the wrong thing. Algorithms are tweaked by humans, of course. I mean, they're not just computer rogue programs running in their own, you know. It's not the Terminator. It's not HAL 9000. It's not an intelligent, sentient computer going, I think Leo would like this story today. No. Algorithms are based on what you've indicated interest for in the past, but more importantly, it's the goal the algorithm is given. Whether it's an AI or a computer program, the human decides what we're trying to achieve with an algorithm. What's the goal here? And in the case of both Facebook and YouTube, the goal was something kind of naive, kind of simple, but very pragmatic. Our goal is to increase engagement. Our goal is to keep you on our page longer, period. And then you just tell the algorithm, whatever it takes, do that. And because we want people to stay there longer. That's good for business. The longer they stay, the more ads they see, the more money we make. Simple. It's actually not complicated at all, is it? That's what the rule the algorithm is given by humans, however. Sometimes they might add a few little side bets, but generally that's it. And we see what you get. World of Warcraft. Very, very popular online game. You ever play it? It's fun. It's very fun, very popular. And the chief purpose of the game is to roam around this land in your character, whether you're an elf or an orc, and wander around and then team up with other folks, real people, because it's a multiplayer game, real people, and raid. And the programmers at Blizzard, who do World of Warcraft, want you to play longer, right? That's the same algorithm. So what they did is they observed, well, what makes people raid more or play more? They didn't have to observe it. The algorithm did it automatically. And then they increased the loot boxes or whatever it was that in the game that got players to stick around and do more raids. And they got very good at it because it's a feedback loop, you know. They're constantly observing your behavior and tweaking the algorithm to increase your attendance, your participation, your engagement. Facebook does that. Google does that. But as a result, and you'll see this anytime you see computer algorithms let to run. They get weird because they're not humans. They're weird. They're very good at optimizing for the goal you give them. But the end result can be bad. I think we've seen that on Facebook and Google, where the recommendation engines, you know, on YouTube, they get more and more extreme because it turns out if we gradually make your videos more and more extreme, you're going to keep watching. So, you know, it starts out, you watch a cooking video, and then they try extreme cooking. Then they try, and by the way, the people who are most successful on YouTube as a result, you know, humans notice the feedback loop with the algorithm, and they respond, are the more extreme YouTubers. That's why you get people eating Tide Pods or setting mattresses on fire or crazy stunts, because the YouTube algorithm goes, yes, more of that, please. And the viewers go, oh, more of that. And pretty soon, you get some pretty extreme stuff. Now, I know YouTube doesn't like it too much. And I just read a tweet from a news person whose young son watches skateboarding videos. And she said, it's frustrating because, as you know, when you're in YouTube, you watch a video and then it recommends the next video and the next video and the next video. In fact, if you have autoplay on, which most people do, it's on by default, it just plays it. And she says, it's basically moved from skateboarding to white supremacy. And that's what it does. That's the algorithm. It doesn't know. It doesn't know. So I kind of wish Microsoft would have chosen otherwise. Because the algorithm, have you ever listened to computer-generated, AI-generated music? It sounds like music. If an alien designed it, like, it's got the outward, but it's something off about it. Same thing with computer algorithm generated pictures of people and things. It's weird, uncanny, not human. Maybe we need a little less of that, a little more human, a little less machine these days. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's my phone number if you want to talk about that or anything on your mind. And mostly people call and say, my computer doesn't work. You can do that too. 8888-ASK-LEO, anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, that's toll-free. Outside that area, rest of the world, you can still call. Use Skype out, something that can call a phone number, and it should be free. There is a chat room, irc.twit.tv. You're welcome there. I observe it as we do the show. You can shout at me there. Best place, though, is to go to the website, techguylabs.com. We just renovated it because I was watching the launch yesterday of the SpaceX Dragon. I thought, man, it's time we got rid of all these knobs and dials and switches and really had a beautiful, clean interface. So we were taking the Tech Guy Labs and we got rid of all the Bunsen burners and the beakers and the test tubes. And it's all touch screens. It's so beautiful. I wish you could see it. It's so beautiful in here in the labs. That's our website. It's free. There's no sign up. That's where all the information from the show goes. You can comment too. So three ways to play our game. 8888-ASK-LEO, the chat room, irc.twit.tv, or Tech Guy Labs. Hello there, Kimmy.
Good morning.
Kimmy Schaffer, phone angel. How are you today?
Okay.
You sound a little stuffed up. Are you getting the allergies, huh?
I think that my allergies have evolved into a sinus infection because it's just been going on for too long.
Yeah. No, it's not good, and it's been bad out here.
My head is throbbing. I know.
I know. My poor wife. I know you're going to feel that way because when Lisa wakes up with allergies, I know, Kim's not going to feel good either.
No.
It's just bad out there right now.
Like I said, it's been since the beginning of this year, and it's only getting worse.
Yep. Well, I hope you find relief. You're here in the filtrated air of the air-conditioned studio.
I know that it's around somewhere.
The molecules in there, too. It's sucking up the air and spitting out the allergens. Yes. I hope.
Yes.
You should just sleep here.
Oh, okay. There is a couch.
Yeah. Remember, we've had people do that. We used to have bean bags in the basement when we had a basement, and people.
I'm pretty sure Burke lived in there.
Yeah, we had to have it fumigated.
He's like
later.
No.
Father Robert used to take naps in there.
Oh well, he had a far drive.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, but that we did get rid of that basement and the bean bags. I might add. Mm-hmm.
But there is a couch.
Who should I? Talk to today?
Well, I think Andy in Missoula, Montana, because I just wanted to say Missoula.
I love that.
He also has a question that if you can't answer it, maybe Sam can in the next segment.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you, Kim. Hello, Andy in Missoula. Welcome.
Leo. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you? Are you driving right now?
out by it parked.
Okay, but you are on your... I have a feeling I know what Bluetooth headset you're on.
Okay, give it a guess.
I forgot the name of it. It's the Blue Parrot?
No, I'm on a Jabra aftermarket. It hooks onto my visor.
Oh, cool. Yeah, those are good, too. But a lot of truckers I know like the Blue Parrot because it's a headset, but it has really good noise cancellation. But
all right,
that's neither here nor there. What can I do for you?
Well, I have a 2004 Chevy truck that's mechanically sound. It's got low miles, but I really want some of the tech advantages in the new trucks.
Yes.
My question is, are there aftermarket recommendations for... You know, I would like Bluetooth built in, a backup camera, GPS that can be installed into the dash. Heck, if it has side collision or lane detector, that would be nice. What aftermarket things could I do to make this truck usable rather than buy another, a new one?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure about the collision detection and things like that. I mean, I don't think there's one device that will do it. But there is one way, my recommended way, to upgrade a car is or a truck. If you can put a new head unit in, a third-party head unit in, I would put in a head unit that supports Android Auto or Apple CarPlay. And here's why. The phone... Your phone, of course, is the most sophisticated computer probably you own. You have it with you in the car at all times. If you could just somehow use its GPS and its capabilities in the truck, you'd be a long way. By the way, and you also get updates a lot faster than you would in anything else. You'd be a long way towards what you want. Not the collision detection probably, but or backup cameras or anything like that. But there are third-party ways to do that. But a new head end, and there are a number of companies that now offer aftermarket head ends. We actually set up a unit. I'm trying to remember what we got. I think the best one is from Pioneer. And what it is, it's a screen. If you've ever seen the newer cars or newer trucks that have these built in, they have bigger screens, like 7-inch screens. But they're not smart. They're smart-ish. Until you get in the car and you plug in your smartphone. And again, if it's an Android smartphone, you'll want Android Auto. And if it's an Apple smartphone, you'll want CarPlay. Most of these units do both. Pretty typically, they do both. And I just love this. You get in the car, you plug in. In my case, we have a Chevy Bolt, which has it built in. But you can do this with the Pioneer. You plug it in. It immediately sees your phone and puts up on the screen the mapping program you choose, the music, all of that. It's coming from the phone, though. And the phone has GPS built in. The phone has the smarts built in. I think that you're going to get – that's the simplest way to get started. The one the Wirecutter recommends is the Pioneer AVH W4500NEX. But if you just search for Android Auto or CarPlay head units, you'll find a number of third-party ones. And then in the chat room, Greg is recommending go to crutchfield.com. And if you enter the vehicle section, you'll see a lot of options there. Yeah, Crutchfield's good for that kind of stuff. So there's a couple of choices. Fortunately, Sam Abul Samad, I should have mentioned, is coming up. He's our car guy. Hi, Sam.
Hello, Leo.
And he'll have some, I'm sure, thoughts. What about upgrading existing vehicles with more modern technology?
Yeah, I would definitely recommend replacing the head unit. The Silverado has what's known as a double DIN. So, there's basically two standard sizes of audios on car audio receivers. There's a single DIN and a double DIN. It's just a double height. So double DIN means you can fit in like a 7-inch display, 7-inch touchscreen. And so, you know, there's a whole bunch now of newer 7-inch touchscreen head units that you can get starting at about $300 that support both Android Auto and Apple CarPlay. There's a Sony for $300, the XAVA X3000. There's an Alpine, a JVC. Crutchfield is a great source for this kind of stuff. On the Crutchfield website, you can go in and put in exactly what model of vehicle you have and it'll tell you exactly what units, and then you can, you know, check
That's
out, you know, what features you want.
That's
it'll tell
great.
You what head units will fit, what speakers will fit, you know, so if you want to upgrade your speakers too, you can do that. And all of these, pretty much every currently available car audio receiver now has Bluetooth in it. Even, you know, like from the cheapest, you know, single DIN units at like $80, $90, all the way up to the high end ones, they all have Bluetooth as a minimum. So that's where I would start for the audio.
That's great. Can you add after the fact, you know, accelerometers and
I would not recommend it. I mean, there are in a 2004 truck, you know, that one may well have, it may have stability control in it already. You know, so it'll have accelerometers, but you know, the thing is, you know, for most of the driver assist features, that's something that really needs to be designed and calibrated for the specific vehicle.
Yeah.
And so you're not going to be able to add most of that. What you can get though, you can add a backup camera. There are aftermarket backup cameras.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of the newer head units, if they've got a touchscreen display, they usually have an input for backup camera. So you can get a backup camera, plug it in, and you know, you'll wire it in and plug it right into the back of the head unit when you do the installation. And, you know, when you put it in reverse, it will show you, you know, on the head unit, just like, you know, on any modern vehicle, it'll show you, you know, what the backup camera is seeing. And, you know, those can be mounted, you know, on a pickup. You might mount it on somewhere on the bumper, or some of them are designed into a license plate frame, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I've seen those. Yeah.
And there's even some wireless ones.
Yeah.
But things like blind spot monitoring, you know, those require radar sensors mounted in the rear corners, and that's not something you're going to be able to add aftermarket.
Yeah, there's a point of diminishing returns. You only want to do so much before you just – it should wait to get a new car or a new truck. Cool.
Yep.
It's time to get in your car and drive on over to Ypsilanti, Michigan. That's where you'll find our car guy, Sam Abul-Samad. He is a principal researcher at Guidehouse Insights. He's a podcaster at wheelbearings.media. And he is a regular on this show and always welcome. Hello, Sam.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
I am great. How are things in Ypsilanti?
They're actually quite nice. It's a beautiful sunny day out. A little bit cooler than it was earlier in the week. It's only about 70 degrees today. But unfortunately, as you guys have noticed out there, it's pollen season, it's hitting me hard today.
It's so funny. We got talked into buying something we put on our furnace blower that's supposed to scrub the pollen out of the air in the house. So I sealed up the house last night.
How's that working out for you?
I don't know. I asked Lisa. She said, yeah, I feel a little better. But honestly, she loves the bee, the big bee, the Benadryl, man. That thing, whew. Her doctor said, how much Benadryl are you taking? Yeah, I know. It's all right. She's a little drowsy, but she's happy. That's all I care about. So what are we talking about today?
So, you know, we've talked about, in recent weeks, you know, some of the challenges that ride-hailing companies are facing.
Oh, man.
You know, with getting people to feel safe getting into a shared vehicle because of the virus. And earlier this week, I had a couple of news items that came out, one from a company called GHSP, which I'm sure none of you have ever heard of.
No.
But they're actually quite a prominent automotive supplier. They've been in business for many, many decades. And their traditional business was building shift mechanisms for transmissions and supplying those to a lot of different automakers. But over the last 15 years, as most vehicles have shifted, or no pun intended, have moved from mechanical shifters to electronic shifters. So if you look at a lot of modern vehicles, you know, they'll have either a rotary knob to go from park to reverse to neutral to drive, or some sort of electronic switch mechanism. They've made that transition. And in the process, they learned a lot about doing electronics, doing circuit boards and software. And about a year or so ago, they decided to put that to work, put that expertise, that new expertise to work in developing some new products. And they developed something that they're calling Greenlight, which they, I guess they were actually at CES this year. We somehow missed them. I don't know how, but we missed them. It's a big show.
It's easy to miss this.
Yeah. Yeah. And what this is a UVC system that you can install inside a vehicle. And they're now piloting this with a company called May Mobility, who's doing little autonomous shuttles. And what this is designed to do, you know, the UVC is not new technology. It's been around for a while, and it's well known that, you know, it can disinfect. If you've got an electric toothbrush, chances are you might have a UVC cleaner. You can stick your toothbrush head in there and you know, disinfect it from time to time. But, you know, this is designed to go in the car, but then there's software controls. You get some sensors and some software that detects when there's nobody, you know, when everybody's gotten out of the vehicle. It can automatically turn on the UV lamp in there and, you know, flood the interior with UV to disinfect it, you know, and run a cycle for a couple of minutes or, you know, however long, as well as, you know, they have some smaller units that can be mounted in various places, various high touch areas like door handles and shifters, you know, to disinfect those as well. And they're, you know, they're installing these in some of May's shuttles to try them out once they start getting up and running again in the next few weeks. And they're also talking to a lot of automakers about, you know, getting these put in there. And they're also working on an aftermarket solution that you can add to an existing vehicle. So probably in the next year or so, we'll start to see some of these units showing up, you know, perhaps in taxis and buses, ride-hail vehicles, where they can, when the passengers get out, it can turn on the lamp, disinfect the interior, and, you know, run these cycles every time that the area where the lamp is installed is empty. So that's, you know, that's a good step forward. And then the other thing that I heard about this week, another bit of news that came out, another solution for doing this came from Ford. Who some of their engineers, as soon as the pandemic started looking at this, you know, how can we disinfect, you know, some of these vehicles with the existing hardware that we have? And so they developed a system that they're piloting now on Ford police vehicles, which is completely software based. It's a software that makes they made some changes to the engine control computer and to the body control computer, so that what it does is it allows the police officers when they get out of the vehicle, like at the beginning or end of a shift, or you know, when they're taking a break, they can press a sequence of buttons on the cruise control, trigger this decontamination mode. When they get out of the car, close the doors, it gets the engine up to speed, gets it warmed up quickly, and keeps it running at a little bit higher speed than normal idle, about 2,000 RPM for about 15 minutes, and runs the climate control, turns up the heat and the climate control.
It bakes the insides.
It bakes the inside, turns it up to 133 degrees
Holy
for 15
cow.
Minutes.
Your car turns into an oven.
Yeah, you know, at 130, you know, above 130 degrees, it'll kill viruses. So they crank it up to 133 for 15 minutes, and then it shuts down, and then that kills more than 99% of any virus that might be in the cabin of the vehicle.
Wow. That's interesting. Now, presumably, you could build in some sort of heating element. Might be a little more efficient.
Well, they not necessarily. I mean, it's even if you built in a heating element to do that, you'd still have to have the engine running to provide enough power for it that much power.
Yeah, yeah.
Since if the engine's running, you've already got that waste heat anyway.
Yeah, it's quite a hot heating element.
So yeah. it's just a matter of, you know, cranking up the fan to, you know, the vent fan to full speed, and, you know, normally your heating system maxes out at about 85 degrees or so. It's not going to heat up your car above 85 degrees. And so it was just software changes to allow it to go up to a higher temperature.
So if I leave my car in the sun with the windows all rolled up, I bet it gets hotter than 133.
That actually probably will do it, because you can get your – it'll be close, because you can get your car sitting in the hot sun up over 120 degrees pretty easily with the windows closed.
Yeah. Not necessarily recommending. It's probably bad for the – the seats and stuff, right? Maybe not. I don't know.
yeah, I mean, it's probably, you know, for long-term durability, it's probably not the best thing. But you
if
know,
it's a police vehicle, it's the long-term. Yeah. Yes, right. You're not too worried about that. Yeah. Wow, that's very interesting. Ford worked with researchers, according to ScooterX, at Ohio State, Ohio State University.
Yes, don't forget the article there. It's the Ohio State University. It will get very angry at you if you leave out the D.
The one and only. Isn't that interesting? What an interesting idea. Do you think that ever, they probably wouldn't put that in street vehicles, normal vehicles, just because of that wear and tear.
Yeah, the wear and tear and, you know, just, you know, the fact that you have to leave it running for 15 minutes at that high temperature.
Right.
You wouldn't want to do that. Plus, you know, for an average person, if you're, you know, if it's your car and you're the only one getting in and out, you know, it's not as big a, it's not
but,
as
But
important.
It's these taxis, but, police vehicles, obviously, but taxis and any of these ride hailing services, you've got, you know, I don't know. Uber ran that ad saying, thank you for not taking an Uber. I don't know how much business Uber and Lyft and the others are getting these days.
They're down about 80% on their ride hailing business.
But they still have that issue of, if we're going to take rides, how are we going to clean out the car afterwards?
Right, and this is one of the UV is really, you know, the solution probably for those kinds of vehicles.
Right. I have a little UV, a phone soap thing. I put my phone in, close the lid.
Same technology.
Yeah. 5 minutes later, everything's dead. Not the phone. Hopefully. Thank you, Sam. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Have a great week.
Nice. That's really an interesting topic. Sanitizing. Really interesting. Yeah. How long does it take the UV? The phone soap works for 5 minutes. Is there a research on that?
Yeah, the UV, the cycle for the UV is about 2 to 3 minutes.
Okay.
But, you know, it depends on the interior configuration of the car.
Right.
And
anything that the light doesn't hit is not getting sanitized, and that's the bigger issue.
Right. That's the limitation there.
Yeah. Underneath the
seat rest. Depending on the configuration, you might need a couple of lamps. But
right.
Yeah.
The little cracks in the seat.
But, you know, for things like, you know, once a passenger gets out, you know, certainly, you know, on the main touch surfaces, it's going to hit all of those.
Yeah. I wipe everything down. If I were going to take a... I am not, but my daughter still has to because she doesn't have a car. She took a Lyft the other day, and, you know, she's got wipes. You wipe it all down. You wear a mask. You do, you know, but still it's risky. It's a risky business.
Sure is.
Well, thank you, Sam. Stay safe.
You're welcome, Leo.
Stay warm. And I hope the pollen doesn't get you.
Too late for that. It's already gotten me.
Yeah, man.
You go outside this time of year and you see the car sitting out in the driveway. It's all covered with this yellow dust.
Oh, yeah. The cats bring it in. There's yellow dust around the cat bowl because they bring it in their fur. And then it's like, wow, I could see their footprints around the cat bowl in yellow dust. Yikes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, stay inside. Those scrubbers, I think, will work. I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting idea.
Is it a HEPA filter that you've put on there?
No, we have HEPA filters too, but they use UV light.
Okay.
So they're doing other stuff as well. I don't know. We might have been suckered. The furnace guy, we had the furnace guy in to he said, you know, because we told him, oh man, these allergies. He said, you know, there is something we have here.
So I don't know if UV does anything for pollen.
No, it's kind of, I think it's like the molecule. I think they're doing some sort of catalytic
ionization filter.
Converter. Yeah, exactly. I think that's what it's doing.
That's actually what Argo AI, the company that Ford owns, that's doing their autonomous system. As they've been preparing to get back on the road, one of the things they've done is they've installed HEPA filters in the HVAC system. So the air coming in from outside is going through a HEPA filter. And then they've got these five-stage filtration systems inside the car. So they put a plastic barrier down in between the seats. And then on the back of each front seat, they've got this five-stage filtration system that goes through a HEPA, an ionization filter, UV, and a couple others that I can't remember, some sort of catalytic conversion and it kills 99.9% of everything that's inside the cabin air that's recirculating.
That's nice. That's cool. I guess that's kind of like the biodefense filtration in my Tesla.
Oh, it's way beyond that. I mean, the biodefense filtration was basically just a HEPA filter.
Yeah, I know. He's such a con man.
But this goes way beyond that.
Yeah, I should mention our Tech Guy show brought to you today, as usual, by those good folks at Epson. Love my Epson printers. These days, if you're working from home or, you know, you're helping with the kids, man, I'm glad my kids are out of the house, but I have so many friends who are doing the homeschooling thing, and, man, you need a good printer. And what you really don't want is a printer that's going to run out of ink in the middle of a print job. That's why you got to have the Epson EcoTank printers. These super tank printers have super-sized, easy-to-fill tanks, and they come, you know, when you buy them with just, you know, a ridiculous amount of ink in the box, thousands of pages worth. So, in fact, I think we're still on our first ink set 2 years later from one of our eco tanks. And I bought a second set. That's the other thing. When you go to the store to get the their nice, easy fill ink bottles, very affordable. Kiss expensive ink cartridges goodbye. Eco tank is changing the way people print. And, man, the color is gorgeous. It's just beautiful. Eco tank. Makes it easy. Add it to your online shopping list so you too can fill and chill. Have you seen the ads with Shaq? He prints a giant poster on the wall. If you're working from home, if you're doing homework from home, you need a great printer. You don't have that printer that the office they had. Check out Epson's EcoTank printers. They're at Sam's Club. They're at Target, Walmart, and, of course, online. You can check them out at Epson.com/EcoTankLeo. That's EPSON.com/EcoTankLeo. Epson, exceed your vision. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, episode 1700. Ooh, boy. I got my head end here, my head unit. Let's see here. Is this a double DIN? I think it's a single DIN. Oh, I don't know. This is the Pioneer. And this is kind of cool. This is a CarPlay unit. You plug in your iPhone. We have to power it. Of course, we have an inverter because you take the AC power and turn it into DC because that's what it expects. And you plug it into this thing. But this thing you'd add to your car. But it's a really cool to have the CarPlay thing in there. I did ask Sam off the air about aftermarket things like self-driving and collision detect and lane detection and all that. He said that's pretty hard to do that as an aftermarket thing. It has to really be tuned and designed with the car in mind. So there really isn't any way to do that aftermarket. But certainly you can get a lot of technology in your car just by buying a new head unit that supports Apple's CarPlay or Android Auto. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Cameron in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, next. Hi, Cameron.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, not so bad. Thank you.
What can I do for you today?
Well, I'm looking for a recommendation on a new tablet.
Are you an iPad or an Android guy?
More of an Android guy.
Yeah.
But the one that I have now, it's, you know, several years old, and I'm just getting frustrated with it. It's like it's got 16 gigs of storage, you know, 2 gigs of RAM. And I find myself having to clear out the data every few months just to do program updates.
It is pretty low spec. You know, it's interesting. I honestly almost always tell people the best tablets are iPads. It's not even close. If you really want an Android tablet, Samsung makes some pretty darn good ones. The problem is they're no cheaper than the iPads.
Yeah, I'm finding that out.
You get a cheap Android tablet, boy, you're just – and what you're going to have is what you've got, which is low specs, make it hard to keep up to date, makes it hard to run programs. And the biggest issue with Android that is a significant issue is Android – can be very insecure. You've got to keep it up to date, not only with the latest Android additions, and Android 11 is coming soon, but that's even not quite as important. That's a feature update as the monthly security updates that Google puts out. And most inexpensive Android devices of any kind, phone or tablet, just don't update. And as a result, you're running, you know, kind of bare to the metal. You're running a risky system. So I generally don't recommend Android. The good news is Apple's entry-level iPad is $329. That is the minimum I'd spend on any tablet anyway.
Yeah, I understand, yeah. I'm trying to keep it less than that because I do have to live with my wife.
But she'll love it. She'll love it. And Apple keeps these up to date. Apple doesn't, you know, Android, you have to wait for the manufacturer to push out the update. If it's a phone, you also have to get the carrier to get involved. And it can often take a while. And sometimes you don't get updates ever. And in most cases, you only get updates for a couple of years. Apple's better about that. They don't have to get anybody's approval to update your iPad. And so they push those out as soon as they need to be pushed out, often more than monthly, more often than monthly. So yeah. I think that there is a lot to be said for spending. Look, you're not going to be spending more than $100 more. I mean, a $50 Android tablet is junk. You know, people buy these things at the gas station. You know, at the convenience store, they're not good. You're going to have to spend the hardware alone. Decent hardware is going to cost you $150, $200. It's just going to have to. So I would say if you can talk, you know, I understand spousal acceptance factor is a very important issue here. But she will love it, too. What do you do with it?
Just really simple stuff. I, you know, do surf the web. I read and send email. But one of the other things that's been frustrating me is that I find in doing research on, you know, recipes or, you know, trying to find the best deal on something we need is that I'll have five or six tabs open at a time. And switching back and forth between them is it takes 5, 6, 7 seconds for the page to reload.
Yeah, because you have very little RAM. It's a very slow processor. That's what you get when you spend less money. There is one exception, I guess, to really cheap Android tablets. They're kind of sort of Android, but for everything you just described, you could easily use an Amazon Kindle Fire.
Yeah.
And if money is an object, that's where I would go. It's Android, but Amazon's modified it sufficiently that it's not exactly Android, although it is possible to put the Google Play Store on there and download any Android app. But Amazon has its own store. And because Amazon's subsidizing these tablets, because, you know, they make money on them, they're really tools to buy stuff on Amazon, at least from their point of view, you can get a decent Fire tablet for a lot less than you would an iPad. So yeah. If you're going to do that, that's, you know, either get a Samsung, which is really expensive, or then go with the Amazon Fire. There's a kids edition, which is really cheap. You don't want the kids edition, probably.
No.
The latest Fire HD 8, which has 32 or 64 gigs and 2 gigs of RAM. So it's not much different.
Well, and they are releasing a Fire HD Plus on the 3rd of June that has 3 gigs of RAM.
Yeah, that'll be better. This one, the HD 8 right now is $90. That's really cheap, but that's subsidized basically by Amazon and the fact that they know that you can use it to shop. That, you know, that's so. Yeah, I mean, if you really have to have, you know, really said, I just can't spend that kind of money. The only cheap Amazon device I would get would be a Fire tablet from Amazon.
I have located a Galaxy Tab S2.
Those are good.
Yeah, in the 8-inch version, it's a little more than a couple $100.
Yeah. No, those aren't bad. The Samsung tabs are great. I mean, for Android.
Yeah.
And at least Samsung's keeping them up to date. And Samsung's a good company. They have good screens. They try to spec them decently. But, you know, the reason you're having trouble with the one you got is because you save money on it. And is it really saving money if you buy a tablet for $100 and then it's so slow and unusable that a year later you have to buy another tablet, this time for $200? You should have bought an iPad. $329, educational discount brings it down to $299. Lenovo makes a 10.3-inch tablet, the M10. 64 gig tablet for $200. Thank you, clever fella in the chat room. Those are probably okay. Lenovo, you know, that's the key. If you're going to get it from a big company, a well-known company. Burke likes his Samsung. He says the battery lasts forever, which is good. The other problem is that Android on tablets itself has really been problematic. Most Android apps don't adapt to the tablet form factor, the size of the screen, very well. The iPad is its own thing and is so well supported, has so many great apps, is so secure and kept so by Apple. I know it's more expensive, but I think sometimes saving money is a false economy on something like this. You're going to save money in the short run, but in the long run, you're going to be unhappy, and it might even end up costing you more. So that's, you know, I understand, you know, money's tight, especially these days. So there are some choices out there around $200. But I try to talk people into doing the iPad thing, if at all possible. It's just, it's better software, better hardware, and more secure. I am a big Android phone fan. I've got a Pixel right in front of me, this Google Pixel 4. But I have to say, even with the Android phone, I'm starting to really be concerned. There's so much malware getting through into the Play Store. So many issues, so many security flaws. The problem is that the iPhone isn't very customizable. It's kind of like the Amazon Fire in that respect. They've really locked it down. Android is so customizable, so flexible, but it's also dangerous. So I have a hard time recommending it. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laborde here, the tech guy. Yes, it's time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that stuff. 888-88, ask Leo, the phone number. 888-827-5536. Our website is techguylabs.com. And you don't have to write anything down as you listen because James is doing it for you. Tip of the hat to James DeRuvo. Thank you, sir. He's my scribe, writing this all down and putting it up on the website, techguylabs.com. And then after the show, we put the audio and video there. So if you miss the show, you can catch it there. 1,700 episodes now. This is episode 1,700. Since 2004. Wow. That's a long time. And there's a lot of episodes. We also have a pretty good search, so you can go back and see what I said about anything, pretty much, just by searching. TechGuyLabs.com. Line 3, Tom in Torrance, California. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. Welcome.
Thank you. Well, great. I just picked up Microsoft Surface, a new one. I had another person set up the previous computer, and I've I run on a standard account, and there was always a standard administrator, I guess, but there was always an administrator as well.
Right.
It made it so that I could never change my own programs, and nobody, if they got in, couldn't change the programs. They had to know be the administrator. I'd like to set that up. I don't know how to do it. I'm hoping you might be.
I can help you.
Absolutely. Me in the right direction.
Absolutely. So the idea here is that if you get malware, you know, malware is just a malicious program, and there's all sorts of ways to get it. Sometimes just in a drive-by, going to a website that's got, you know, a kit of malware exploits installed on it. And sometimes it can be a legit website that just by accident or by maladventure got hacked and has this kit of stuff. So you can get it by drive-by. More often you get it, about 91% of the time you get it from an email that looks real but's not and says, you know, install this or open this and you get it. The advantage of not running as administrator is malware can only run at the level you are. And as you know, in a standard account, a limited user account, you can't install software. So malware really is somewhat limited by that. Now, there are some exceptions. There's a kind of exploit is what we call these. These are the technologies that are used by malicious programs to impact you. They're called exploits. And there are exploits that do something called privilege escalation, which means the malware can, without your typing in a password or anything else, give itself administrator rights. So that is not unusual. There's another reason why you don't need to do this anymore. I used to recommend, in fact, when I set up my mom's Windows 2000 machine way back when, I gave her a limited user account, and I said, if you need to install something, here's the password to the administrator account, and you'll have to log in as administrator to do that. And that, I think, you know, she never did get a virus or a bug or any problem at all, so it certainly helped. Microsoft's improved the situation, though, with something you've probably already seen, User Access Controller, UAC. Even if you're running as an administrator, when you do something potentially risky, UAC pops up. That's that thing that, you know, the screen goes gray and the user account control window pops up and says, are you sure you want to do this? And right. You have to agree to it. That is, in effect, Apple does the same thing. That is, in effect, giving you the same benefits of running as a standard user. So nowadays I've amended my recommendation to Mac and Windows users that it's okay to run as administrator. But when you see those pop-ups, don't just go, yeah, okay. Pay attention to them because something is trying to install on your system and you should make sure it's something you want installed on your system. Now, having said all that, if it gives you comfort to run as a standard user, I think it's a great idea. It's a simple thing to do, presuming the guy who set up your Surface gave you an account that's an administrator account. You do have an administrator account, right?
That was on a previous...
No, but all systems...
I just bought the new...
If you bought it, you're an administrator. Microsoft... Right. Yeah, when you first set it up, it gives you administrator. So it's very simple. You go to the control panel,
and
you can add a new user and make that user a limited user. I think they call it standard user now. And then just use that as your regular login. You need this administrator account. You always want it. In fact, it's a great idea. I wish people did this anyway. Whenever you get a new computer, create a new account. Keep the administrator account separate, because then if you mess up your day-to-day account, even if it's an administrator account, you always have an unmodified user account you can go back to. And it's not unusual in Windows, for instance, to need that administrator account to fix things because your user account got messed up. So it's always a good idea to have two accounts, even if they're both administrator. In this case, just make that second account and make it a limited user or standard user.
So I would go into the accounts?
Windows Control Panel, Accounts and Users, and Add User.
Family and other users or something like that?
Yeah. It's a little, Microsoft, I wish they had not done this. They actually, with this new, there are two control panels now. There's the stupid one, and there's the one you're used to. And the stupid one loads, but is not as full-featured as the old one. And they've hidden the traditional user account, the user creation and control account. And it doesn't pop up as part of the control panel anymore. So if you want to use the one that you're used to, you actually have to go and type a command in the command line. I don't know if you're in the mood to do that or not, but it's a useful command to know. And I'm trying to remember, I think it is, I have to remember. You hit Windows R to run a command, and I think it's Control User Passwords 2, I think is what it is, if I remember correctly. That's the old user control panel, and it'll be more familiar to you if you've used Windows for some time. And in that, you can do what you really want to do, which is make a limited user. You can do it in either one. So settings, account, other users, add a user. That's the modern way to do it. But if you're an old timer like I am, I always do control, hit Windows R to get a command line. Windows key and R at the same time. That's the run command. And type control space User Passwords 2. And that will give you, you'll recognize that one. That's the old school. I don't know why Microsoft did this. I guess they decided, somebody told them, it's too hard to use the control panel. Okay, we'll make a dumb one. It's not so functional that's easy to use, but I think it's confusing to have two separate kind of control panels with completely different looks, feels, and power and abilities. That's just weird to me. But that's the way Microsoft does it. So, it's not a bad idea. Have that extra account. Make it a standard account. If at some point it feels hobbling to you, you can always change it to an administrator account. But it's a really good idea to have an unused administrator account just sitting there in case you need it and use day-to-day a separate account, your user account. And make that a standard account. That's fine. Just remember that there's two things have changed. One, there's privilege escalation malware that could still, you're not completely impervious anymore because of this malware that can do a privilege escalation. And secondarily, user access control is supposed to, kind of prevent you from doing anything, even as administrator, that could be dangerous. Control okay. space user passwords 2.
Control space user passwords 2.
Always a good thing to know. Always nice to be able to go to the old school passwords, user accounts.
One last question on this Microsoft Surface. Do you consider this a tablet? It just seems so much more than like your $50 or $100 tablet. That you're
it is. And by the way, it costs a lot more. No, here's what you're getting. First of all, you're getting a full desktop operating system. You're getting Windows on it. You're also getting a beautiful screen and a lot of power. There's a lot of horsepower. They start at 8 gigabytes of RAM. Most of them are 16. You're getting a modern, in most cases, 8th or 10th generation Intel processor. They're nice machines. They come out of a very odd time in Microsoft's life. They were making Windows, kind of the old beige box PCs. Mm. And Apple started to eat their lunch with the iPad. And somebody freaked out in Redmond and said, we got to do something about the iPad. And since they no longer had a mobile platform, they used to have Windows Phone, that failed. They said, well, what if we took our desktop platform and we shoehorned a tablet into it? And that's when Windows 8 happened. And it was a nightmare because it was a desktop, but it was also a tablet. It would do weird. It was just weird. Over time, they've honed down the rough edges of this. Windows 10 still has that tablet-y thing in it. In fact, if you detach your keyboard, there's a tablet mode. You could set it so it'll automatically go into tablet mode. You've probably seen that. Now it's a tablet.
I've done it. Yeah, done it. Exactly.
Now it's a tablet. Attach the keyboard, goes back to the desktop mode. Most of the time, it looks like a normal computer instead of some weird hybrid thing. So that really comes from a time when Microsoft was very concerned about the future of desktop computing. They've calmed down a little bit, but they still put that feature in. And it's interesting, their most popular computer, in fact, it was their first computer, is the Surface, which is a tablet that has an attachable keyboard, looks a lot like an iPad. The only difference is instead of having a mobile operating system, it has this hybrid desktop / tablet operating system called Windows 10.
I see.
So you get kind of the best of both worlds. I think the Surface are very, very nice.
Yeah, I've liked it so far. So, but anyway, thank you for your
help. My pleasure. Yeah, thanks for calling. And I always honor anybody who says, look, I want to make my system more secure. That's the exact right instinct, especially if you're using Windows. It's the exact right instinct. I think you don't need to run as a standard user anymore. But if it makes you feel better, it certainly will add some benefit. Part of the problem with the UAC is that, pops up and people just, whatever. We have a pop-up fatigue. We don't read them. We don't pay any attention to them. We just say, I just want to do what I want to do. So it does behoove you, if you are running as administrator, to pay attention to those UAC pop-ups. They're warning you. You're about to do something dangerous. You sure you want to do that? You know what you're doing here? And think about it. Even if you pause 5 seconds to say, did I intend to install this software? Is it happening because I opened an email instead of... those are the questions you need to ask yourself. That is a warning. That's Windows saying, hey, watch out. Danger ahead. Here be dragons. That'd be better. You know what? That's what Microsoft should say. Instead of, would you sure you want to install this? You should say, here be dragons. You have entered the danger zone. Maybe play a little Top Gun. Fly into the danger zone. That would wake up people the first 12 times, and then okay. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo the phone number anyway. Hey, look who's on the line, my good coffee-drinking friend, Chris in Miami. Hello, Chris.
My friend.
Oh!
Finally.
Oh! Chris is so hopped up on caffeine, I have to stand back a little bit. How many cups today, Chris?
Well, I'm going to be honest. I'm in four cups easy.
But now you you have a higher threshold than the average bear.
I really do have a higher threshold, and I've actually cut back on the number of cups because we have so many other different options at Sizzle that I'm now with the fire and iced tea. I do the Sencha green tea, but I do get my four cups in, and one of those is iced coffee. And when I got on the call with Kim, she's like, Chris, I'm having a full cup. I'm in two sips. But what she didn't tell me is that she was having iced coffee, and I love iced coffee.
Ah, summertime. It's iced coffee time.
Yeah, well, you better believe that. That's absolutely.
But as I told you in the chat room, I just, you know, not intentionally, I didn't give up coffee. I love coffee. And I have about 80 ways to make coffee at home. But because Lisa, you know, Lisa needs her coffee. Yeah. But I, for some reason, I just got on a chai tea drink, jag, and that's all I drink now. And I honestly quite like it. So you chai like chai tea. You told me chai's good. You like chai, yeah.
Yeah. I've always enjoyed chai. Actually, I started drinking chai back in the 90s when I lived in Rhode Island.
Oh, yeah. Well, chai, of course, is from Rhode Island.
Yeah. I didn't know that, but I...
No, it's not. It's Indian. Chai masala. I'm just teasing you. You know what is from Rhode Island, though? The world's best coffee drink. Do you know about Eclipse?
No.
Oh, yeah. So there is a battle in Rhode Island between two different companies that make coffee syrup. You probably wouldn't approve of this.
Mm.
There is Eclipse and Autocrat. They are, they're weird because, and it makes coffee milk. It's a coffee syrup. They came out in the 20s or the 30s. Actually, Autocrat, by the way, bought Eclipse in 1991. So the rivalry is spurious at this point. But when I was a kid in Rhode Island, you either were an Eclipse drinker or an Autocrat drinker. You wouldn't mix the two. By the way, the state Senate approved coffee milk is the official state drink of Rhode Island in 1993.
Wow.
It's very sweet. It's very good. It is probably nothing like the coffee you drink, which is, you know, gourmet coffee produced in a gourmet fashion with a French press or an AeroPress or something like that. But coffee milk, it was kind of what I grew up on.
Nothing wrong with that at all. I wanted to ask you, since you might know now, my friend in Colorado, I said, I do not own a coffee press. I'm going to get one. I ordered.
Oh, you got to get the AeroPress. Yeah, that's the way to make it.
Aero. Okay, he said Bonjour. It's like.
I don't know that one. Okay. The AeroPress is made by. Okay. The AeroPress is probably not what a gourmet coffee lover would recommend. It's made by the same company that makes the Aerobee Frisbee clone. It's plastic, but it's what Lisa swears by. Hey, Chris, we used up our time talking about coffee. Stand by. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, coming up. I'm probably diabetic because I drank coffee milk. Because it's mostly sugar. Now, apparently, Morning Glory syrup is really the way to go, but it's not well known. Available only in grocery stores in the Northeast. MorningGlorySyrup.com. So, Chris, I'm sorry we ended up talking about coffee instead of your question.
Okay, so I'll make it quick because I know other people want to get on the call. Okay, so back on the 6th of May, I decided, I updated my iPhone to 13.4.1. .1 caused my iPhone to have a problem to the point where it wouldn't get out of restore me mode. So I called Apple. They said, you got to send it in because there's no Apple stores open. So I sent it in. They got it back to me the following Wednesday. And so my question is, now that I finally got past it, but I didn't have my iPhone for like almost a week. No iPhone, just Apple Watch Series 5. And I said, what do you do if you don't have an iPhone, but you just want to use just an Apple Watch with cellular? They still seem to have one connected to the other.
They're slowly moving away from that, and the cellular was the first step away. But and what you did, you can do, right? You notice it still worked. But the problem is to update it, to install it, to set it up, to change it, to install apps. All of those things still require an iPhone. But I do believe Apple's moving away from that. I mean, it's not in their interest. They obviously want to sell iPhones and Apple Watches, but I think that they understand that the standalone is a desirable feature. So the rumors are our MacBreak Weekly panel seems to think that they're going to make a standalone Apple Watch sooner than later, even, you know, like maybe the next couple of years. But for right now, no, you got to have the – so in that week you didn't have the phone. It still worked, right?
It worked. I couldn't use messaging. I could only
You'll have no messaging. Yep.
Yeah. And they still won't tell me what happened with the iPhone. They replaced one of the main logic boards in the iPhone, which wouldn't work with the current screen. So they replaced the screen, the logic board. Now I have a new iPhone XSX. I'm going to get the new one coming this fall. But I'm like, you know, guys, what do? I have an I don't have an iPhone. I run a business. I have a life. They said they all kept asking me, do you have a second iPhone? No.
Thank God I have the iPhone SE because mine, same thing. I have 11 Pro Max. The video just stopped working. I started glitching and jumping around and stuff. So I mailed it in and I'm using the SE. Truthfully, in this day and age of masks, it's nice to have a fingerprint reader on the phone again. I really like that. But it's a little small. I'll look forward to getting my 11 Pro Max back. But yeah,
for two iPhones moving forward, Leo?
Well, it's not. I mean, I never did have to worry about that, but I've always had backup phones. If you're really dependent on it, it is nice to have and get an SE, get the cheap one, $400. Because what you do before you send in your iPhone is you move the SIM over to the SE. You back up your iPhone, you restore it on the SE now, and it's an iPhone 11 guts, so it's just as fast. So essentially, you've got a kind of a backup phone, not cheap, $400, but at least you got it. And if it's your business, as you said, your business runs on it, you kind of need it.
Yeah.
Plug the website.
Okay.
What is it? Tell us. Plug it.
Website. Oh,
right now.
Oh, for coffee.
For your site.
CS7.SISEL.NET.
CS7.SISEL.
.net. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Leo.
Take care. Woo-hoo! It's time for Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, discoverthetopfloor.com. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I was looking at the schedule. You would be in Kyrgyzstan right now.
Yes. I got my calendar pinged me and told me that I should get on a plane.
Oh.
But you know, you can't get people to come on these things. You can't go. So
you probably can't even get into the country these days. You know, your 2-week trip is eaten up by quarantine. So Lisa and I were talking about that. You know, I'd love to travel. There are places you could go like Vietnam and Hong Kong. They'd probably be safe, but they don't want people from outside coming in. So we're
kind of understandable.
I understand it. Yeah.
Looking at the state that this is in. So, and a lot of us photographers, especially those who do a lot of workshops and things, have been hit pretty hard by this whole thing. So, you gotta kind of reinvent yourself. And,
well, you told us you were working on a secret project.
That's what I brought
you
today.
What is the secret project?
The secret project, I call this Photo Sensei. It's at sensei.photo. Sensei is the Japanese word for teacher. And I thought if I can't get people here to be on workshops, then I need to bring the workshops to the people. So it is a video workshop platform, but it's not like pre-recorded stuff. It's live video sessions with photographers, educators. I'm kicking this off with just myself, but I'm already talking to a few photographers. So eventually this will be a team of several photographers covering almost anything you could wish for. And it's live sessions. So we have a video platform that is like a real classroom kind of system. So we can do presentations. We can do interactive stuff. We can share screens. We can look at people's photographers. We can do portfolio reviews. We can do
film photography.
Everything on there. I mean, people. I know a lot of people have a lot of questions about things. I can live teach my 1 hour 1,000 pictures session in there, for example.
See, that's well worth it. That's so good.
People need help getting colors right, getting their photos more tidy, working on their image composition, different genres like landscape photography, street photography, or architecture photography. There's so much to learn there, and I've taught thousands of people over the last 15 years. So why not make that accessible to people? So you can pretty much go there, book an individual session with me, and in the future with other photographers. And it gives you the available times and dates and things, and then you just click and you book.
This is really, you know, it's interesting because, of course, we all have to adjust our lives. Times have changed dramatically. And it's tough for a photographer, especially a photographer like you, who does travel workshops. I mean, you've got to find a new way to deliver the stuff that you do and people want. What platform are you using? This is kind of, I'm looking at the image on your website, sensei.photo, of what a session looks like. There's a picture of the teacher, the picture of you, and then there's a much bigger screen.
There's like a presentation area there where you can also share screen
And for slides. Photography, you need that to be big because that's where the images are going to go.
It's true. And I've used the things that are available. I've not reinvented the wheel here. So I've looked at different platforms. I've looked at Jitsi. I've looked at Zoom and other things. But I ended up going with Big Blue Button, which is an open source classroom system. That I run my own server for that now. So
I've
pretty much spent the last 3 weeks setting all this up, but it really has come together nicely. So Big Blue Button, it's closed rooms, so you get a link, and then I can let people into the room. It could be multiple. We have tested it with up to 20 people on the server, so nice. Could be a group session, and then you. I can share the screen. I can show pictures from my computer. I can. Look, the other party can share their screen too, so I can look someone over the shoulder and give them tips on their editing, that kind of stuff. So Big Blue Button is behind that.
It makes sense you chose a classroom-focused conferencing system as opposed to Zoom. Zoom, everybody's picture is the same, and whoever's sharing the screen takes over the whole screen. This is more like the teacher and the pupils can see each other, and then they can see what they're working on together. I really like that idea. And you said you were able to set up your own server. That's kind of cool too.
Well, it's a virtual server that I've it cost me like $20 a month. So it's not really that expensive to get a virtual server these days. And you need a bit of command line chops to set it up, but it's not too hard. They have it made fairly simple. You just need a Ubuntu system. And then a few commands, and the server is up and running, and then you can go in and customize it a bit. And that works really well. And then the other big point here was that if I was to do all the scheduling, then I wouldn't be able to teach. So yeah. I've integrated that with a scheduling system called appointlet.com, which integrates the scheduling and the payment processing. So people will see my calendar or the parts of my calendar that I've opened up for this. So everyone can just go there, click and choose the date that is free on my calendar. And then I get a ping and it gets blocked in my calendar. And it includes the information that people gave when signing up. So it really, I've tried to take as much of the back office kind of stuff out of this and automate it as much as possible.
I just find this fascinating. Of course, you have an advantage because you're very technical. Before you became a photographer, you were a programmer.
It helps, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there'll be a lot of photographers who would be at sea doing this, but you have those skills. But I think it's also, we are at an unusual time in the world where, you know, we are in the midst of this, you know, shelter in place, quarantine for a lot of us. But there also are all these tools. It's as if we've been planning for this for decades that make all this stuff possible virtually. It's very interesting.
I've been thinking of setting something up like this for at least 2 to 3 years. It's been in the back of my mind. And the only reason I didn't do it was because I didn't really get my butt kicked by something like the virus. You know, so this had to come together to give me the impetus to spend 2 to 3 weeks on putting this all together. I mean, just the writing for the website is like a week's worth of time. So it really takes a while to do this and then to test it. And then to, I mean, we just did a weekend, a couple of workshops on the weekend with groups in there just to see if it works with more people. But
would you eventually, you think, do some of your workshops this way?
Oh, definitely. I mean, this is not just for the corona time. This will stay. This will be part of my business from now.
I like it. Yeah,
absolutely.
Really cool. What does it cost?
A simple 45-minute session starts at €79. It's like a bit over $80 for a session. But then there's plans for repeat things and so on, where the price drops. So
I want to. Do you have gift certificates yet? Because I think
you can book a gift certificate. Yeah. Sure,
Lisa would really. My wife, who is an avid photographer and super talented, in fact, frankly, she runs rings around me. But I think she's always interested in taking class. Maybe that's why she's so good taking classes. Sensei, sensei.photo. Chris Marquardt, thank you. It's great to talk to you. DiscoverTheTopFloor.com is his other website. Tips from the Top Floor is his podcast. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I could finally attend one of your workshops.
Yes, you could. They're a bit different than the live ones.
Honestly, I would much prefer to run around with you and take pictures of ice flows, but...
I mean, there's a different kind of teaching, but it also means for me, I have to develop new skills and learn how to package some topics into a session in a short format,
in
a compressed format. Again, this is just starting, so I have no idea where this will go, but.
No, I'm running a Jitsi server myself. I guess Big Blue Button, because it's a learning management system.
It's just a classroom system.
It makes so much more sense. Is it Node? How hard was it to install? Or is it?
If you have the right version of Ubuntu on the system and a plain basic Ubuntu system, they give you a command line that installs the whole thing for you. Yeah.
Nice.
Now, I don't know what parameters you have to change for it to fail, but it worked out of the box for me, and that was good.
Isn't that great? Yeah, I see the shell script. Nice. Yeah, I'm running Debian.
It's a very good system. It is very user friendly. It is simple to use. It has a lobby, so you can have people wait for you to let them in. It has a shared chat in there, a group chat. It has you can mute others. So as a moderator, you can pretty much be the teacher and organize the whole thing. It works really well.
To set up SSL, were you able to use Let's Encrypt, or do they use something else?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
That's built in.
Yeah,
in the setup script, you only need a domain for it, and then it'll automatically install the system that keeps the Let's Encrypt certificate up to date. So it's a well thought out system, and it's fully open source.
Yeah, my system would run it. Interesting.
I mean, I've got a medium sized system for it, and I think we tested it with almost 20 people, and it didn't buckle.
I use Jitsi just because it was easy to set up. I wasn't aware of Big Blue Button. This looks really great. I mean, I'm not doing classrooms, so I don't really need that. We're just to set it up for the family.
This will from now on be my my workshop system.
Good.
Let's see how this pans out.
I like how it looks. Yeah, really cool. The Tech Guy Podcast brought to you by Wasabi. People are discovering Wasabi. I know, they can't believe it. They say, this is amazing, Leo. I say, I've been telling you about this for a while. Wasabi is hot cloud storage. It is a replacement. In fact, in many ways, a plug-and-play replacement for Amazon's S3. 80% less expensive, significantly faster, and with features S3 just can't compete with. I love Wasabi hot cloud storage. Now, let me talk about how it works. In fact, I'll give you some of the reasons why I like Wasabi better than anything else, better than Azure, better than Google, better than S3. First of all, security. That's important, right? How about 11 nines of durability? 11 nines means on average you lose maybe a file every, I don't know, 649,000 years. every geologic era you might lose a file. Actually, you won't lose anything because Wasabi has active integrity checking. Every object stored on Wasabi is checked every 90 days to make sure it's intact, it's perfect, it's unmodified. And if it ever is, don't worry. They've got fully redundant Tier 4 data centers. They're highly secure. And there's more than one of them. So you know, bit missing here, get it from over there. Your data is basically completely safe. In fact, they encrypt it even if you don't request encryption. All the data by default stored in the cloud is encrypted. They also, by the way, they do something I think is so cool. They let your data be immutable. You can set your data immutable, which means it can't be modified by malware, hackers, fumble-fingered employees, even your own error. It's immutable. It's unchangeable. It's safe. It's protected. They've got full access control mechanisms, bucket policies, ACLs, so you can make sure that only the right people have access to your data. I would go so far as to say Wasabi is actually more secure than on-prem data. Why don't people use cloud storage is my question. Well, maybe they think it's not as secure. It's more secure. Not as safe. It's more safe. Oh, it's got to be more expensive. It's not. In fact, in most cases, Wasabi costs less than just the annual support contract for the same amount of storage on-prem. So if you're starting to buy hard drives and because you got to keep up with everybody's creating more data than ever before, stop. Stop the insanity. Stop the on-prem. Go to the cloud. That's the place to be. And if you're a managed service provider that sells cloud services, you're going to love it because you can charge less and make more. It's 80% less than S3. Yeah, there's two ways to pay. You can pay as you go, $5.99 a terabyte a month, flat fee. They don't have a lot, by the way. That's the other thing. S3's got, it's so confusing with all the tiers, right? There's no tiering. It's just one tier. No, that's all. But completely compatible with S3. They use the same API, so all your S3 apps work. They don't charge for API access. And here's another one that saves you a ton of money. They don't charge for egress. So how many times have you stored something in the cloud and then found out you have to pay to get it back? Not with Wasabi. No charge on egress. So I mentioned there's two ways to pay as you go, but there's also, this is new, something they call reserve capacity storage. This is so good because they know that many people know they're going to need a certain amount of storage every year. You can buy that storage ahead of time. Wasabi's reserve capacity storage makes buying cloud storage kind of something like buying on-prem storage. If you're thinking about buying more hardware, compare the price against 5 years of reserved capacity storage. And by the way, you can purchase the reserved capacity. You're basically buying ahead for 1, 3, or 5 year increments. And as you buy more or storage and longer term, the discounts get greater. And I think that this is really, you can save even more, significantly more with Wasabi. More secure, less expensive, easier to maintain. I mean, I feel like it's a no-brainer. The only problem is your boss might say, well, I've heard of Google, Microsoft, Amazon. Who's this Wasabi guy? Started by David Friend, a good friend of mine, a serial entrepreneur. He created Carbonite. He's brilliant. He has made something that is transforming cloud storage. It's HIPAA compliant. It's FINRA compliant. It's CJIS compliant. But the bottom line when you go to the boss is, boss, it's 80% less, 100% compatible, and it's 6 times faster. Oh, did I mention that? I forgot to mention that. 6 times faster than the industry leader. Join the movement. Migrate your data to the cloud. Calculate the savings for yourself. You can try it right now. Start a free trial. Get storage for a month. All you have to do, free, no cost. Just go to wasabi.com, W-A-S-A-B-I, wasabi.com, and use the offer code TWIT. Free month. Try it. Show the boss. Tell him how much you'll save. I think it's pretty much a no-brainer. I know so many people now switch to Wasabi and are loving it. And kind of working on the people who are still buying hard drives. Stop the insanity. Start Wasabi. Wasabi.com. Use the offer code TWIT. And we thank them so much for supporting the network. Thank you, Wasabi. Thanks, David. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We should mention that our photo assignment continues. Chris will be back in a couple of weeks, maybe next week. I'm not sure. I have to do the math. We usually give you about a month for the photo assignment. So if you want to participate, and it's just really an excuse to get out there and take pictures. There's no prize or anything. Our subject of the month is normal. He's going through the alphabet. Last week, or last month, it was my home, M. This month, it's normal, and whatever that is, the new normal, I guess, but whatever normal is to you, and we that's part of it, we don't tell you. But here's how it works. Get out there, take some pictures. You know, it doesn't have to be a fancy camera. Use your camera phone, that's fine, whatever you've got. Really, it's the photographer in the eye that matters, not the technology that you're using. Take a picture, then your mind illustrates the word, the concept normal. Then what you do is you upload it to Flickr. Flickr is a photo sharing site. It's free. It's wonderful. We love it. Flickr.com. You have to join. Used to be Yahoo. Smug Mug owns it now, and I love the guys at Smug Mug, the McCaskills. So this is a great company running the service. It's a great photo sharing site, a good place to get critiques, to share your photos. I'm on there, and I love it. Flickr.com. Once you join Flickr, you'll then have to join the Tech Guy group, which is our, you know, group within Flickr. And if that's free and it's easy to do, there are lots of groups on Flickr, as you'll notice. The Tech Guy group, though, is the one with my picture and lots of members. I think there's 11,000 or something. And when you join it, then you can submit your photos. And here's what we ask you to do. So upload a picture of normal. Tag it with TG Normal for Tech Guy and Normal. TG Normal. That way, Renee Silverman, our moderator in the group, will say, oh, this is a submission for the normal assignment. She'll put that in the normal group. Chris will review it. And in I think it's going to be a week or two. He's going to come back and pick three to talk about on the show. So if you want to participate, it's just it's a way to get you out there taking pictures. And yes, me too. Although, you know, my pictures are never quite good enough. But that's the point. You don't get good without taking more pictures. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Line 4, Fred in Upland, California. Thanks for hanging on, Fred. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. I'm working from home and loving it.
Good. You know, it's funny. I think a lot of us are going to stay home. Why not?
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah. If the boss will let you.
Yeah. Yeah, right now it's pretty good.
Well, we're lucky to be able to keep working, I have to say. So what can I do for you today?
Well, I didn't know that the Owl Cam company was sold until I was on your show a few weeks ago. And I've got two of these things, and I got some emails from them. They say they started back up, and they want for an annual subscription for two cameras, $375.
Yikes! That's $30 a month. Yikes!
Yeah, they want 20 for one, 20 a month for one, and then they'll give you a discount on the second one. So I don't
That's
know.
That's a lot.
I don't know if I want to do it. I bought the camera when they first came out with Android, and the original company, they were giving away $1,000 a day for videos that you send
in. Yeah, remember that? Yeah, yeah.
They paid me $1,000 for one of my videos, so I feel like I'm ahead right now. I don't know if I want to do any more. The camera still works. It just doesn't have the cell phone part of it in it.
Right. That was the kind of the magic of the Owl Cam. It's a camera, dashboard camera. You put in your car. It has two cameras, front facing, so you can, if you get in an accident, you can see what happened. Rear facing, so you can get images of yourself and prove to the insurance company, no, I was paying attention or whatever. And it would, I had some nice automatic features, but the thing that was really unusual about it was it had LTE built in, and so it could automatically upload if there were an accident. It would start uploading immediately. If somebody broke into your car, it would start uploading immediately. Even if they stole your camera, the images of them breaking into your car and stealing your camera would be available to you on the server. You don't get any of those features once the Owl company went under, but you still get a camera that records locally and all of that. So, you know, that I guess really if you think about it, $30 for two cameras – and they're giving you LTE, right? That includes LTE service.
Yes, that's basically what you're getting. Everything else still works. As long as your phone is close to the camera, it'll connect to it through its internal Wi-Fi, and you could get the
right.
You could get the videos. The one thing that I didn't see anywhere is if they will replace the camera for free if it's stolen.
Right, I bet not. My guess is they're not making any new ones is the main reason why, right? And I doubt you'd get repair either, right?
Well, I went to their website, and it looks like they're selling them again. So,
interesting.
I'm not too sure about that.
So this company, CallPass, what they do, and really they're best known in business. You know, if you're driving a delivery truck, the boss may install a CallPass device on the truck so he can keep track of you. That kind of thing. So they actually do something similar, but for business, to what the Owlcam does. So they had it would make sense that they would acquire the Owlcam because they had the network resources to do it. They're an IoT company. They do asset tracking. They do a lot of, car tracking, that kind of thing. Whether they have the resources to make more Owlcams, I don't know. They need to address that because it's one thing to pay $30 a month for my existing Owlcam to keep it working. I don't think, come to think of it, that's that unfair because you are getting LTE with it. In the original Owlcam, and that's probably why they went out of business. That was included in the price of the camera. It was $300 camera, but you got the LTE for free, right? We didn't pay a subscription, I don't think. Yeah.
No, you didn't pay extra. They had they gave you so many units per
That's right,
month.
Per month, yeah.
And then you could buy extra units, but unless you were looking at it remotely, all the time, you'd never go through them.
I mean, clearly this was a bad business model. they went bankrupt, right? Even before COVID, they went belly up. So, or at least sold the assets. They seem to have kind of dissolved the company before they sold the assets. So I think maybe this isn't such a bad thing.
They're given through today to do it.
Oh, really? Oh, I better check my email.
They had a time limit on it through today. Although it looks like you could still sign back up afterwards, but then it might take longer to.
I have to commend CallPass. It's owned by Xirgo, which was originally what was put up on the website was a notice from that company. I have to commend them for at least attempting to make whole existing Owlcam users. I mean, that's better than nothing. Better than a chunk of plastic, and you still have the choice. And as you said, you could still use it. I don't know anything about this company except that this is their business. So, and they've been doing it for a long time, quite successfully. So, in that case, it's probably a good bet that they're going to run it for a while. Well, but I don't know what they're going to. I really wonder if they're going to continue to manufacture these or develop them. And what repairs would look like and that kind of thing. Although my Owlcam is pretty reliable. I've never had any trouble with it. I don't know. What are you going to do? You're going to buy it?
Well, I'm thinking about it. I was just debating whether I should do the one-year subscription. They're given 10% off on that or to do it monthly. My concern would be that I pay for a whole year and then in 6 months they're not doing it anymore.
Right. There's always that risk. But to me, having seen this happen many, many times before, the good news is this is a company that's essentially in the same business. So it's not like they have to, spin up servers and figure out how to solve the problem. So it did take them a little while. Owl disappeared in January, so it took them a few months to figure this out. But I don't know. It's a risk. But if you love your Owlcam, and I sure do, it might be worthwhile. Boy, that's really, I'm glad you called with that because I had not heard that and I did not see the email.
Yeah, they sent out a couple of emails and I'm thinking I'm using their money because they gave me the $1,000 a year or so ago.
Oh, yeah, you're playing with the house money.
Yeah. So I'll probably do it. I just didn't know anything about this company.
Well, I didn't. You know, the first announcement on the website was Xirgo, Xirgo. But what I didn't know, and Xirgo is a private equity firm. They're not even a real. They're not a technology company. They're just acquired assets. But it turns out that they also own this Call Pass, I guess. And Call Pass, they in 2019, Zergo bought the Baltic Car Equipment in Lithuania, fleet management solutions for light vehicles. So they had Call Pass in the U.S. They now have Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. I think this sounds like, you know, probably it's a solvent company. They're building a portfolio that makes kind of sense. It's probably a good business. This fleet tracking is, you know, has got to be a good business. Everybody from UPS to, you know, the dump truck driver down the street is using this stuff. I'm kind of glad they did it. I would say it's probably it's not a safe bet, but it's probably a worthwhile bet. And if you obviously you love the Owlcam, you have two of them.
Yeah, I bought them. I think they even gave a deal on them. When I bought them, it was like Black Friday weekend, and they gave 25% off. So I bought two, one for each car. And,
yeah,
they've been, you know, really good. And the company itself was really good. They replaced one of the parts that I broke, the piece that you plug into your data port. I kicked that with my foot and broke it, and so they sent me another one for free.
See, that I don't know, because, you know, who knows what their manufacturing capabilities are. Although the Call Pass stuff is fairly similar in some ways, right? So it's not a camera. It's just a little thing that plugs into the OBD2 port, but that's kind of how Owlcam works. I don't know if Zergo and CallPass are related. I think they are. Or if Zergo sold it to CallPass. So, anyway.
I'll probably do it by the end of the day today. So,
and then I'm going to go check my email and look for my...
Well, if you just open up the app, it'll walk you through the process.
Perfect. Too. All right. I'll do that right now. Wow. Yeah, because I really liked that Owlcam. I never used it, not once. You know, I never got in an accident or anything, but... Nice to have.
Yeah, I bought it after my my car was broken into. So
yeah,
but since then, pretty much haven't had any issues, and it's always worked, and it records the videos, and it has you know, nice timeline. It has a lot of storage, so it keeps things for quite a while.
Yeah. Yeah, mostly we just played with it in the car with the kids and make little videos and say, you know, okay, presto, and record the videos. That's about all I ever did with it. So, well, cool. Yeah. Thank you for the heads up. I'm gonna log into the app and, you know, maybe I will. I have to think about it. That's not cheap, but, you know, maybe it's worth it. It's certainly good that they have a business model.
Yeah, that helps, right?
Yeah, I think that was a real problem with Owlcam. They didn't have really much of a business model. They just kind of that. We'll just sell a lot of them and figure out what to do with it then. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater. Let's see. What else? Cameras? Digital photography? Yeah, sure. Smartphones? Oh, yeah. Smart watches? Sure. Anything with a chip in it. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you have a question, a comment, or suggestion, give us a ring outside of the U.S. or Canada. You still can call. Use Skype out, something like that, to call that number. You need a voice-over internet protocol solution that will call landline phones in the U.S. or 800 numbers. 888-827-5536. We also have a website, techguylabs.com. That's free. No sign up. No spam, I promise you. We don't even know your email address. It's there, though, for your perusal, techguylabs.com. Line one, Brian in New York, the Big Apple. Hey, Brian.
Hey, what's going on there, Leo? How are you guys doing today?
We're great. How are you?
Hanging in there, not too bad, you know.
Good.
Just enjoying the sort of quarantine and, you know, those secondary and tertiary roles that we're all taking on.
Yeah.
Including as family IT manager.
Absolutely.
24/7.
You bet.
Ooh, I have a newfound respect for those guys in the office and women, too, that you pick up the phone and they just fix it for you while you continue on with your daily tasks.
It's so true, isn't it? We're all our own IT department now. Yep.
Yeah, so you got everything from Zoom conferencing to audio connections to Ethernet to everyone's rooms. You know, they want to have fast gaming while they're at the same time on a Zoom conference for school.
And you're the guy, huh? You're the go-to guy.
And offices are set. You know, offices in New York are reevaluating their real estate footprints.
That's right. They're This might be your future. Yeah.
Well, I was a little scared when I went down to our doorman and I saw a box that arrived, and it was actually a screen that was about the size of Rhode Island in it. So it was just craziness. So it's just really just unbelievable time.
My wife, who has moved her work home, must be the same screen. It's an arm span in length, and it's curved. And yeah, I feel like
Dell ultra wide, 34 inch. Yep,
exactly. And I feel like she's in like a Cinerama movie theater. It's crazy.
it's really remarkable how things could change. But I think as we've all think that a lot of this is going to be here to stay. So here's kind of what happened. So, you know, a couple of years ago, you know, we had a home laptop that was sort of our primary computer. You know, we were very much of the mindset, you know, buy the best machine that you can afford and you know, essentially, you know, run it into the ground for 5 years. That was sort of the model. So we got, you know, just about 2 years ago, you know, an HP Spectre X360 15-inch touchscreen 4K.
Oh, is that that's a nice laptop.
Well, you know, I thought it was. It was very well equipped with, you know, 16 gigs of memory, a terabyte SSD, Thunderbolt port, you know, decently spec'd, and actually we were really enjoying it. No problem. But then out of the blue during the pandemic, we wake up one day and, you know, it's just about a year out of warranty, 2 years into our 5 year. And all of a sudden, won't boot.
Oh, crud.
No power.
No.
So anyway, we do say, you know, this is one of the big three: HP, Lenovo, Dell, right?
In fact, HP for a while went through a bad period, but when they split off the enterprise division and the PC division, I really thought they started improving. And those Spectres, I have a Spectre 13. I really think they're beautiful, nicely made laptops.
Well designed. Everything's great, but no power. So, of course.
So, wait a minute now. Hold on. When you say no power, you've got it plugged in and it won't turn on.
Right. You can't get to a boot screen. And so you can charge the battery. So we do have power going to the board.
Okay. So that's the question. You see a light. You see a light on the machine, right, when you're plugged in?
Yeah, we see a light on the machine. But here's the interesting thing. This is what you'll appreciate. So I did, you know, of course, tech support gets called. What do we need to do? Let's do a little troubleshooting, scour the internet.
Dad tech support.
Lo and behold, we get it. We come across the fact that, you know something, we're not alone.
Oh.
And in fact, there's a known problem circulating around.
With
actually none of the components that I mentioned, right? All the components are name brand components.
Yeah.
However, what we're relying on HP and its vendors to create is essentially, you know, integrating it and pulling everything together.
Yeah.
And there's a guy who has a little strip shopping mall, retail repair shop in Northridge, California. And I'll give him a plug because it's really interesting. I think you'll appreciate taking a look at it, where he's posting YouTube videos of all the computers that are sent in.
Oh, that's great.
The name of the shop is NorthridgeFix.com.
I love it. What a great idea.
Northridge Fix.
Yeah.
So anyway, so he's got all the test equipment. He's got the thermal cameras, and he says, you know something, what came in today? Oh, what do you know? It's the fifth HP Spectre X360 that we've gotten.
Oh.
And they all have defective voltage controllers.
Ah.
Voltage regulators.
Well, that's a good sign. Yeah. At least you know what's wrong.
Yeah, at least you know what's wrong. But hold on a second here. Like, you know, you figure, well, let me call HP and tell them that they've got a known problem. But apparently, you know, once you're out of warranty,
nothing they're going to do for you. Yeah.
What not only not do for you, you can't even call them.
What?
It's $100 to call them.
Oh,
if you just
Lord.
Go online and say, what's the phone number for HP tech support on this laptop? It says, oh, we'll be happy to have you. Just put in your credit card for $100 and we'll take your call.
Well, it looks like he can fix this this laptop. I'm looking at his video, actually, as he's fixing
this. Yeah, did you see that? He says, oh, yes, another one. No power to the board.
Yeah.
So I'm just one. I wanted to, like, you know, there's something that strikes me as inherently wrong. I mean, I know a warranty is a warranty.
You know, it is occasionally the fat case that a company will honor. I've seen Apple do this, for instance, something that's defective, because that is clearly defective, even outside the warranty. They're not required to, however.
Right.
So it's, you're saying it's 3 years old now?
No. It's two. I bought it in, let's say, the end of, like they call it, the December, about 2.5.
That's really frustrating. That's really frustrating.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't know. Last time I was out here having dinner in New York, I bumped into Meg Whitman, but I think she had already left HP by that time.
She's got her own little thing on the side. If I were HP,
nice, by the way, very nice.
Yeah, she's a lovely lady. If I were HP and wanted to, continue sales, and there were a widespread problem with a component that I'd used, I might consider an out of warranty fix. As I said, Apple has done that. But it's rare, and even with Apple, it takes some time to convince them that there's a widespread problem. So they probably
should.
Sold thousands or tens or maybe even hundreds of thousands of these.
So anyway, I kind of mentioned that, maybe I could talk to the boss. I talked to the client on this, my wife, who I was supporting her particular machine, and said, well, I can post something on the HP forums to see if they'll respond. And her response was, well, I need a computer today.
Yeah.
Right?
Guess what? You're not going to buy another HP, are you?
Well, you know something. Not only am I not going to buy another HP, but I'm not in the market for another $1,300 laptop.
Maybe, yeah.
That just put me out of the market, because we're already set up with the screens, the keyboards. So you don't want to know what I did? I went ahead and bought an Intel NUC.
Oh, those are great. Love the NUCs. And yes, much more repairable. You're right.
Yeah, I said, I'm going to basically, I'm going to buy the memory. I'm going to buy the drive.
Now you know why the IT department has very specific recommendations. By the way, one of our IT guys, Burke, who's our fix-it guy around here, says bad voltage regulator, you could probably repair that. Any repair shop could probably fix that, as long as they can get the parts from HP, of course. But so it might be worth, it's an expensive and it's a nice laptop. It might be worth taking the trouble to fix that. But I agree with you. What these NUCs are, it stands for the New Unit of Computing, which is a stupid name. But what they really are is just little computers. They look like the Mac Minis a little bit. They're a little bit smaller. Intel invented it and makes some, but there are other companies that make NUCs as well. They're great because they're like desktops, but they don't have the big tower. But you can open them up. And you can swap out parts and so forth. They're kind of like a laptop meets desktop. And I have a couple of NUCs myself. I'm very fond of them.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, it seemed to me like it was very well constructed. And mostly, one of the things you worry about is the heat dissipation. It had, it wasn't too loud.
They got little fans sort of in them most of the time. Yeah.
Yeah, it was all like the sort of benefits.
No, I think a NUC is a good choice. Laptops, if you think about it, these are challenging to make. Especially those Spectres. I'm holding up a Spectre X360 13 right now. They're paper thin. So you don't have a lot of room for cooling. Often the components in here aren't standard, or they're at least modified to HP specifications so that they can make this laptop thin and light. And lately, and Apple started this, everybody's followed suit, even Lenovo. Lenovo was famous for making repairable laptops, components that you could take apart, replace the keyboard, the screen, the trackpad. Even HP Lenovo has started soldering components onto the motherboard, making it impossible to repair. So we're in this era where people want thin and light, but in order to do that, they've got to make very difficult to repair devices. And laptops, generally speaking, are going to be highly proprietary and somewhat difficult to repair just by the nature of the size and the form factor. So you're better off, even a NUC, which is tiny, you can still open it, and it's got more standard parts in it. Of course, a desktop's the most repairable, but your wife probably doesn't want a big old tower on her on her desk.
Yeah, you know, the notion of when I showed her a photo of what that looks like, you know, it was like a deer in headlights.
If I were in your shoes, and I've done this with Lenovo, and I'm sure HP does it, I would maybe, if you're going to be the IT department, consider extended warranties. You know, when I'm, for instance, when I bought this Lenovo, I got, I think, 3 years of in, what do they call it, in-office replacement. They come, they fix, they leave, and you can even get guaranteed 24-hour. And that's the kind of thing IT departments do buy because they don't want to have to deal with this. And they don't want to deal with it out of warranty after a year. That's the standard warranty. You know, that's not very long when it comes to a laptop. Laptops get banged up, they're bonked around. It's not unusual for a laptop to fail just a day after the warranty expires. So if it's something where, you know, it's getting carried around, that's the one. I don't normally buy extended warranties, but that's the one area where I might consider it. Anyway, thank you for sharing your story, and thank you for telling us about the NUC. A good choice. Take care, Brian. IT dad. He's the IT dad. Well, that's not unusual. We IT moms and dads, we got to do it all. We got to teach the kids. We got to keep the systems running. Make sure the internet's working. Make dinner. It's tough. And then still do our jobs if we're lucky enough to have them. It's tough. You have my sympathy. I'm glad I don't have to homeschool my kids. That would not have gone well. I don't think. No, not really. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Jim on the line from Laguna Hills, California. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, you know, I've been a longtime watcher of This Week in Tech and the Windows Weekly Show.
Our podcasts,
I watch it on YouTube all the time.
That's a good question. If a podcast is on YouTube, is it still a podcast?
It's hard to say it because I always think a podcast is odd as
I know.
Endless, but.
That's why I tried like the Dickens for almost 20 years to get people to change the name podcast to Netcast, but they wouldn't go for it. So there you have it. I have a podcast and a YouTube channel or two.
Well, you got a lot going on there, actually.
Yes, yeah.
It's almost overload, but I definitely find that Mary Jo Foley and Paul Thurrott are very apropos for what I do for a living. I do software development in Delphi, because I know you know what that means.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, Paul is the Delphi guru.
I've been programming in Delphi for 30 years, essentially.
Delphi's an interesting story. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's my understanding that originally it was Turbo Pascal, basically, which loved and used from Borland. It was an amazing programming environment, and for DOS in the earliest days, and then became Delphi. And so is Delphi still widely used?
Yeah, they've expanded it. It's a cross-platform with Linux, Mac OS, iOS, Android, and PC. You can write it once and not necessarily have to debug it everywhere.
Is it still very Pascal-like?
Oh, yeah. They've expanded. The recent version they released has expanded the language features, so it has, like, inline variable declarations and
interesting.
Things that aren't exactly the 1950s Pascal.
Niklaus Wirtz Pascal. Well, what can I do for you?
Well, I am rocking the Microsoft 950 XL Windows phone, even to this day.
Oh, my goodness. You are a Windows fan, aren't you?
Well, it's not even that I'm a fan. It's just when I got the phone, it had a 21-megapixel camera on it. And like 5 years old or something like that, 4 or 5 years old. And I just haven't found the iPhone to be as easy to use in a lot of cases. But I know that it's, like, way out of support. I mean, there's like a whole other discussion we could have probably about I almost feel like Microsoft, you said the Windows Phone failed earlier, and that's what made me think to call you, but I think it actually was more like forced suicide.
Well,
when they released this phone, they fired all the developers.
I know. That was Windows Phone was a brilliant idea. They took a step back. Android and iOS are already very successful. So they took a step back and said, "What? Let's start from scratch." And they came up with, I thought, a great phone and a great interface. The problem is it was probably just too late, and they couldn't get the phone stores, the carrier phone stores, to recommend it. They just could. And then what really put it out of its misery And I'm surprised that you're still using it, but most banks stopped writing, you know, their apps stopped working. A lot of the apps that people wanted on a smartphone stopped working. If I can't bank on my smartphone, I'm not going to use that platform.
I have a desk job where I work at home all day.
So you're on your computer doing it. You don't need your phone to do it.
I need my phone to do things like when I'm driving to pop on the car stereo and say, hey, your wife texted you. Do you want me to read it to you?
Yeah.
Which is one of the things that Cortana does, or the voice assistant is really good.
Although, you know, I think Microsoft's going to slowly fade that out, too. They're making big changes, too. In fact, I don't even know if they're going to keep calling it Cortana. So at some point, you're going to have to jump. But if you still don't have to and it works, why not? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I don't think there's any security issue with it. I'm sorry, I had to take a break, but we're still talking. I don't think there's any security issue with it. It's certainly not a targeted platform at this point.
No, that's the best part.
So as long as it continues to do what you need it to do, there's absolutely no reason to retire it. But you are going to run, like, at some point, I don't know if that Cortana stuff will continue to work, things like that.
Well, I've been getting a lot of use out of it for email and other things, too, that works really well.
And a great camera.
Strapped to it.
Great camera.
The camera's awesome. Yeah. Actually, all my iPhone people like me to take the pictures.
Which model did you – you have a Nokia, I take it.
It's the Nokia Microsoft 950 XL.
950, yeah. I think I have one lying around somewhere.
And even after 4 or 5 years, I'm still on the original battery, and it'll still last a day and a half.
Well, that's the other thing. That's interesting. So the battery hasn't died on you.
No. And I can even pop the back off and change the battery if I wanted to.
Oh, that's something I really miss.
Like I said, I think that right when they came out with that phone, shortly after that, I think Windows 10 came out for the phone. And then that combination, it was a shame that that never got to see the light of day very long.
It looks like I could buy a brand new Lumia 950 right now. They're still on Amazon. I don't know who's selling them. That must just be leftover stock. Wow. $175.
Yeah, it's been a good deal. A great phone, and I kind of hate to go to the. I mean, I'm not going to go to Android. I'm only going to go to the.
No,
iPhone.
You'll end up going to the iPhone. You know what? If you can hang on a little longer, iOS 14 is rumored to have some nicer. The real issue for you, you've got this great user interface on the front page, the tiles and all that stuff, and iPhone is very limited in what it can do on its desktop, but. The rumor is the next version, iOS 14, is going to add widgets and stuff. It may start looking more like Windows Phone. I wouldn't be surprised. So maybe that'll – it depends what you need it for. The fact that it works for you and you're still happy with it, I see no reason to change. Why add anything to the landfill?
Yeah, I mean, I actually still have things on there that are working that made it to the Windows Store, like the Phonos app to control my Sonos system and stuff. And
the Sonos app still works?
The Phonos. It's the phony Sonos.
Phony Sonos. There you go. Yeah.
Thermostat app still works to control the Honeywell thermostats in the house. And
you know, if it does all the stuff you want it to do, I see no reason to abandon it by any means.
Yeah, I guess more than anything, because you and Paul and Mary Jo talk a lot about this stuff, I figured that maybe I might have missed something.
Well, and unfortunately, we mock people like you.
Anymore. Oh, no. No, trust me. It's funny because I used to get mocked until I became the photographer of the group.
Isn't that funny? They love your pictures better than anybody. Yeah. Oh, you know, Paul loved that 950. He loved it. Yeah. I think he was just as sad as anybody. But he also, there are people like you, Jim, who I think you understand – exactly what you're doing, and you're not saying to Microsoft, bring the phone back, but there are people who just really think Microsoft should do a Surface phone and bring back Windows Phone, and I think...
I miss having a third alternative, really.
Oh, we need it. I was very... Yeah. For that reason alone, because really, Android and iOS are not enough. They really are not.
No, it's not enough of a competition between just two people.
Exactly.
And that's the thing was, like I said, the Windows Phone, I've had one forever, since Windows CE in 2003, like when you had the first HP iPad phone or something.
I had
like
those too, yep. I had an iPac. I love my iPac. So I'm looking at the Delphi 3 Super Bible right now, Paul Thurrott's first book. I have it right in front of me. It's thick. There's a lot of calls in that thing. That's pretty impressive. And still a lot of business writing that stuff.
I actually write real-time stock market at software that's highly, highly intensive. 3 million messages per second. I'm processing and parsing and analyzing charts and everything. It's funny because a lot of people think it's like Visual Basic and it's more like C++.
Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? Hey, great to talk to you. Have a good one, Jim. Thanks for listening. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Jim in Tampa, Florida is next. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Leo. Can you hear me?
I can hear you great. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Hey, before we get into the things I want to talk about, I wanted to mention something about that Delphi you just spoke about.
Yeah.
My experience is that when you program in Delphi, you have a client that is Delphi code, and it connects to a database.
Right.
It's a front end, and I
suspect that's what the other Jim was using it for. Yeah, it's a front end. Yeah.
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 And it connects to a database.
Right.
Right. And that's against security best practices. Allowing a client to connect directly to your database is not good news.
It's pretty much how every website in the world works, but okay, I'll take your word for it.
No. Other websites, Weblog, Playbus, whatever, you have a client next to an application server, and the application server maintains a connection with the database.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the way. Let me give you a little bit about my background. I have 20 years of security experience. 10 years developing security code, the other 10 years as a cybersecurity SME.
Awesome. So when I'm running WordPress and it's got a PHP front end to a MySQL database, that's not what you're talking about?
A general rule is this. Security that's enforced on the client side is not security.
Well, you're talking about zero knowledge or zero trust, rather, security, which I completely agree with. It's a pretty high bar for most applications, but, you know, it's actually an interesting concept. This is what Google has started to do. It used to be you'd assume that anything within the network, imagine the confines of the workplace, was to be trusted, and it's still that way in most places. What if you assumed that anything that used any service was untrusted and you made it prove that it was, in fact, authorized to use that service? That's called zero trust, and that's essentially what Google does these days, and it is the best way to do it. Unfortunately, as you well know, I'm sure, and it's keeping you in business, too, very few people actually do that anymore or ever do.
Well, let me explain. Okay, so I'm a certified auditor, certified information systems auditor. Level 3 by the Department of Defense. And I'm a Certified Information Systems Security Professional, CISSP. Also level 3 by the Department of Defense. If you want to Google it, Google CISSP Wiki. And Wiki has a nice short...
Okay, I'll take your credentials on the face of it. What can I do for you?
Okay, well, I just want to explain how these exploits... Here's the reason I called. So what happens is, I don't know if you've heard of the Verizon DBIR. Have you heard of that?
No, what is that?
Okay, so Verizon, once a year, comes out with the data breach investigation report.
Oh, okay, yeah.
They poll companies around the country, and they ask, have you been breached and how? And they don't report who the company is because those companies don't want to be known that they've been breached. So they gather all that information together, and they come up with a top 10 ways that the applications have been exploited. And once they come up with that, the security industry goes to work. You'll see OWASP. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yeah, I don't want to really get in the weeds and all this stuff, but I appreciate it. I appreciate your expertise. John on the line, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Hi, John. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. I have a question for you. I need to replace a family computer, and currently we have a 2007 iMac, which is beyond.
That's pretty old.
And I'm looking at Barely runs, hasn't updated in a couple of years.
I often, you say dog years like seven. Human years is one dog year. So a seven-year-old dog is 49. I think computer years are more like 10, maybe even 15. So that would be at least a 130-year-old computer. It's pretty old.
Yeah, yeah, it's a dinosaur.
The knees are shot. Yeah. So is it time for a new one or what?
It is. And I'm looking. I love the Mac ecosystem. I've been looking at the Mac Mini to replace it.
I love the new Mac Mini. Yeah. Apple really took the Mac Mini seriously in their last update, which was only a few months ago, and beefed that thing up to the point where I think it's a really nice Mac and pretty affordable.
Yeah, I was thinking about that or an all-in-one iMac, but I don't like the mechanical drive on the iMacs that they have.
Yeah, the default is Fusion, but you can get an SSD instead. So the way Apple does, and I actually was shocked when I found out that Apple was still selling these because I never thought the Fusion drive was a good idea. And it goes back to the days where spinning drives are so much less expensive than solid state drives. But solid state drives are so much faster than spinning drives. They thought, what if we did some sort of weird hybrid where you had a small, less expensive solid state drive and a large, less expensive spinning drive, and you somehow use some magic in the operating system to put the stuff you needed the most on this fast drive, but the stuff you needed the least. In theory, it's a good idea. Intel did the same thing, but in practice, it isn't much faster than a spinning drive. The good news is SSDs have fallen in price dramatically now. Maybe Apple's not reflecting that completely on their store. They've never been known to be the most aggressive in pricing, but you should get an SSD, and iMacs can be equipped. It's just you have to do the customize option with an SSD instead of that Fusion drive. You're absolutely right.
Well, that's why I was considering the Mini as a budget option. And
yeah, then, if you have a keyboard, mouse, and monitor, because the Mini doesn't have those. It's just a little. It's like a NUC. It's just a little computer. I think the Mini is a great choice. There is an advantage to the Mini. The problem with the iMac is the screen's built in. People like that because there's fewer wires. It's aesthetically more pleasing, but it's not as practical. If the screen fails, the whole computer goes in, right? It's hard to get at anything inside the iMac.
That's what I thought. To take it for a repair or something, the Mini is much easier to carry around.
Absolutely.
Even in an Apple store or whatever than
absolutely.
A big monitor.
And if you want to get at the guts of an iMac, and believe me, you don't. I've done it. You need a giant suction cup because you actually have to lift the glass of the screen off to get to the inside. You can only get in from the front. So it's not designed for any repairs. It's really, yeah. I think you're smart. And you're saving a lot of money getting a Mini.
Yeah, and with the Mini, if I buy, say, 8 gigs of RAM and need to upgrade in the future,
you can put another stick
by myself?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should read up on it. Go to ifixit.com and read up on it. It's weird the way they put it together. You need a spudger. It actually, Apple uses a rebranded paint scraper. It very fancy looking, but it's still a paint scraper, and they use that to wedge their way into it. So it's, you can do it, and I've seen people do it, but you should read up on it. And it absolutely, you can bring it into Apple as well. But yeah, they now have Minis that are full fledged computers with all the speed and power. The iMac screen is gorgeous. There are some advantages to integrating the screen in, but from a pure compatibility, upgradability, repairability point of view, the Mini is absolutely the way to go. I think they're really great. And you got Thunderbolt 3, so you can put an external hard drive on there that's just as fast as an internal hard drive. You've got 10 gigabit Ethernet. That'll last you a few decades. You've got eighth generation processors. They're nice. I never would hesitate recommending the Mini. In fact, I think the Mini is often overlooked because people want, the pretty iMac. I kind of wish I had a Mini right now, to be honest with you.
Well, my brother-in-law recommended also the Lenovo Idea Center. The only thing is, I don't like Windows, and my wife doesn't really like Windows.
No, don't get Windows.
No. Okay. And the Mac operating system software is free to update, right?
That's right. They never charge.
That's what I like about it, too. Yeah.
I think Macs are great, and I think the Mini is great. I'm looking at, and by the way, Scooter X says, oh, Leo, they haven't had to use a paint scraper to open those things in years. Okay, they got screws now. That's good. that makes sense because it was a dumb idea, but they used basically friction to hold it together. So eighth generation, this is $1,099. So you get the 8 gigs of RAM. You're going to want to upgrade that. It does come with SSD. You may want to do this. It's nice if you can get in these things. You can do third-party upgrades always for less than Apple charges.
Yeah, much cheaper than
right. The
upgrade.
So you could get the 8 gigs of RAM and do your own RAM upgrade. You can get the 512 storage and do your own storage upgrade. Actually, what I would do is get a 512 internal, but just treat that as your operating system and applications and have all your data on an external Thunderbolt drive. Lots of reasons to do that, including price.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, then you get the heat out of the box.
What about an external monitor for it? What do you recommend? Right now, I think our old 2007 is a 21-inch monitor, so we don't need a huge monitor, just something decent.
Big monitors are nice. I'd look at Dell. Dell's monitors are very inexpensive. They have a broad variety. You might find that, you know, for $300, you get a 27-inch. It's pretty nice. I think my wife has the 54-inch, whatever the super widescreen is. That's a little overkill, but she loves it. So I think Dell makes very nice big monitors. Actually, there are a lot of choices in that, but Dell's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm kind of I have a iMac Pro, but I think if I were going to upgrade, I'd probably get a Mac Mini myself. I agree.
Yeah, I just like the ease of, you know, taking it somewhere to get fixed or sending it somewhere.
Absolutely.
If someone dies, I just replace that.
Absolutely.
Instead of the whole thing.
It's not as pretty, but boy, is it.
It definitely isn't.
No, but it's very, very practical.
Right. That's my thought, too. Yeah. Okay, yeah. I'm glad you agree with me.
Yeah. Yeah, enjoy.
And the 2018 is the latest version of it, right?
It does look like you cannot do, there's no user installable RAM on the 2018. I would look at ifixit.com and their repair guides to see what you can and can't upgrade on the 2018. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that is the latest.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Have fun. My pleasure.
Yeah.
Take care.
Yeah, appreciate
Bye-bye.
It. Yeah, bye.
So iFixit does show you can do it. So Apple's just saying don't, but you can. That's why they use this, you know, difficulty moderate. 22 steps is a lot to get it to it, but you can do it. Yeah. It's up to 64 gigs of RAM. I would have no trouble doing this. And they use the Torx screws. Oh, it looks like you still need a spudger. Yeah, you got to use a spudger to get the bottom cover off. And then once you get the bottom cover off, there are Torx TR6 screws. Oh, there's quite a few of them. And once you remove that... thank you. Thank you to Lady Laura for spinning the discs today. Such a good job she does, our musical director. Thank you to Kim Schaffer. She's our phone angel, our studio staff. John Slanina, Burke McQuinn. I think that's who was here today. They keep the bit pump running. Got a, you know, constant oiling on that thing. I don't know why, but it's just squeaky. Anyway, thanks to everybody who's helped out today. Thanks especially to you for being here because, you know, that's the biggest help of all. I don't want to have to sit here for 3 hours talking to myself. All of the things you've heard on the show are available, links and so forth, at our website, techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. That's free. There's no sign up. I don't have a newsletter. Not going to bombard you. I promise. I don't even know your email address. How would I send it to you? techguylabs.com. And during the week, if you're kind of geeky and you like geek talk, you might have heard our earlier caller talk about Windows Weekly and This Week in Tech. We have a variety of tech-focused podcasts. They're also on YouTube. What does that make them? I don't know. Hybrids? I don't know. Their audio and their video. The best place to go to find out more about all of them is our website. TWIT stands for This Week in Tech. TWIT.TV. Twit.TV. Six letters. That's all. Nice short address. No com in there. Just twit.TV. On we go to caller number Benny on the line from Pasadena. Hello, Benny. Hello, Benny. Benny, did I scare him away?
All right, Leo.
Oh, there he is.
Sorry about that.
No, that's all right. You were muted.
I was on mute, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, so these Zoom meetings have killed my hotspot thing I had going here.
Oh.
It was never an issue before. And
yeah, but they use, if you think about it, you got all these video streams going, right? That's a lot of data.
Yeah. So now I have to get some internet here at home. And
what happened? Did you run up against a bandwidth cap? Is that what happened?
Yeah, pretty much. Used it all up.
What was your bandwidth cap?
I honestly don't even remember.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't want you to hotspot too much because what they don't want you to do is make it your internet, your home internet. But it is, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now I have to get some internet, but I honestly don't know much about it, and I just want to do it in a safe way where I don't have any or give the bad guys an opportunity to get in.
It's not really any different than using your hotspot. I mean, the internet's the internet. So there are a couple of different ways you can get internet access. You can continue to do what you're doing. Just go to the phone company and say, look, I want to use this. Tell them what you just told me. I used up my bandwidth because it's Zoom. What's it going to take to get more bandwidth? In some cases, Verizon and others sell special hotspot devices. If you've got good high-speed cellular data where you are, sounds like you do in Pasadena, that might be the easiest thing to do. Generally, though, cellular data costs more than if you were to get it from a land-based internet service provider. In most areas, Pasadena is certainly one of them, you have a number of choices. There's one cable company. FCC never required the cable companies to share. So if you've got cable TV, you can go to your cable TV provider. Who's your cable TV provider? Is it Spectrum?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, they have actually pretty good internet service. You can go online and look at the website, or you can call them. They'll probably offer you a bundle that's TV plus internet, maybe even try to get you to buy their phone service. I know I'm on Comcast Xfinity. They try to get you to buy their home security. They'd run your disposal if they could figure out a way to make money out of it. So they'll offer you a bundle, and it's a little tricky to navigate all the costs and so forth, but that's probably the best internet most people have is from their cable company. Your phone company will also offer internet. And the FCC does require your phone company to let other companies ride on their lines. So the phone lines can carry internet via something called DSL. There may be many DSL providers in your area. The problem with DSL in general is it's not quite as fast as cable internet. It probably is comparable to what you're getting on your hotspot, but the farther you're in the city, so you're okay. The farther you get from the central office, people in rural areas really don't have that as an option. It only works about 2 kilometers from the main office. After that, it starts to get pretty slow. There may be some weirdo kinds of internet available to you, wireless internet. There's certainly, I don't recommend it, but you can get satellite internet from WildBlue and Hughes and companies like that. You have to buy a dish. It's expensive equipment. They are very limited in their speed. There's latency issues. They're not ideal for Zoom, for instance. So I would say your three choices really are wireless via a mobile carrier or wired from the phone company or the cable company. And in most areas, the cable company is probably your fastest solution. My cable company, I think, is pretty typical for Spectrum, too. It's about $60 a month for pretty quick internet.
Okay.
Once you do that, they'll say, okay, we're gonna send you a home install. And in most cases, it's all you'll need. You connect your cable You'll get a splitter in the home install. You'll split it. The one that's going to the TV, you'll connect the other one to a cable modem. It'll be a cable modem that also has Wi-Fi built in, which is nice. Plug that in. You turn it on. And in most cases, it'll just work. You might have to call them and say, okay, I'm ready. And they press a button and it starts working. And then it's Wi-Fi. So it's throughout your house. And so that's pretty nice. That makes it fairly easy to do.
Oh, okay, so they send you what you need. Like,
yeah,
I mean, I've been hearing about modems and routers. And
you know, you don't have. I would say if you're just starting out, and this is just for work for home, just have them send it to you. As you get more, you know, as you get more demanding, or you want more control, or maybe you want to save the $7 or $8 a month rental fee, you might want to buy a router that you have to get the modem. Well, actually, you know, you can buy the modem too. You get your own modem, get your own router. That's what I do, but. You know, make it easy on yourself. Let them set it up. There may be in your neighborhood, if you live in a metro area, as you do, there may be a fiber provider in your area. That's usually more expensive, but a lot faster. And fiber providers like AT&T and Verizon, you might have Google in your area, will also offer television. So you can replace your cable company with a fiber provider. Cable companies don't like that. But that's one of the reasons it's not everywhere. Cable companies try to block them. So I think that the easiest thing to do, call the cable company, see how much it would cost. It's probably going to be less, frankly, than the hotspot from a cellular company.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Spectrum doesn't charge. They're telling me in the chat room, Spectrum does not charge for the modem, which is nice. There's no rental.
All right, nice.
Yeah, so that makes it easy.
Cool.
Yeah. Well,
thank you very much.
Hey, you're welcome. We all need the internet nowadays is not a luxury, right?
Right.
We need it. Everybody needs it. And it changes everything. You have kids?
No.
No. Just you?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably why you don't have internet. The minute you get kids, you got to have the internet, Dad. How am I going to watch my YouTube? You got to have the internet. Yeah. Hey, have fun.
All right, thank you.
It's not as complicated as it sounds, and actually your life will be a lot easier. Hotspotting, really, they don't want you to be that to be your main internet access. They really, from their point of view, it's a, you know, just a little extra you can use from time to time. And so they do have pretty low caps on. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.